south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, folks, today, as with the last show, I'm recording in the beautiful people's paradise of Venezuela, a place you've probably figured out by now. I don't recommend expatting there at all, or even visiting. I mean, for any but the most experienced and adventurous expat travelers, and even if you do, you better really know your Spanish. Now, just a warning, if you do, try to be as inconspicuous as possible, which is tough because there are almost no gringo tourists down here anymore at all, thanks to Chavez's brand of socialism. Now, for you gringo tourists, expats, and gonna-bes and wannabes, let me tell you that South America is getting pretty damn expensive. So if you're on a budget, and all you've really got to live on, let's say, is a measly social security check of $1,200 to $1,500 a month, you could always count on really good pickings in Central America if you avoided Belize, Costa Rica, and Panama. Which, of course, are first world expensive and so gringoized, well, you might as well stay in Miami. But you should realize that South America is getting pretty damn expensive, and it looks like the only way you could swing a first world lifestyle on a social security check is in Paraguay for one. And get this, Venezuela. And why Venezuela? Because of the currency controls, the black market, the two-tiered monetary system, and the shortage of dollars down there. So if you can somehow get dollars into that country and change them for the local currency bolivars on the street, the so-called black market or alternative market, instead of changing them for the government's crappy official rate at the bank. You really can live like a king or queen on a social security check, but who knows how long that's going to last. I mean, something's going to break there, and it's going to be bad. And that means it's going to be better yet if you have dollars. But the trade-off is commodity shortages and civil unrest, so who needs that, right? But note, you'll have a huge gringo advantage if you end up going down there. But man, if you try to expat too or do business in Venezuela, you'll really have to keep your eyes open. Like I said, it's not for the faint of heart. Now, the fact is, you can still live a pretty decent first world lifestyle on a basic social security check in many other countries in South America, but only if you do live outside a medium or large sized city. So, if you don't mind living out in the boonies, in a small town or quite a ways away from a big city, you can still pull it off. But why go that far when you can go to Honduras, Salvador, Guatemala, or Nicaragua? If you're on a budget, especially a strict budget like a social security check, Central America is your best deal all around. Except, again, for Belize, Costa Rica, and Panama. However, if you have cash and money is not much of an object, you might think you could live a safe, protected life anywhere. But that's not true. Just look at Mexico. And Argentina, for that matter. A country that's nowhere near as dangerous as Mexico, but whose economy is in a shambles and it's crashing and burning right now. As you know, so there's nothing but uncertainty there, so it's not recommended. And I never recommend Panama or Costa Rica either, simply because there's no gringo advantage there anymore and people are jaded and contaminated by the gringo dollar, as well as the fact that those places are now just loaded with crooks and con artists whose specialty is preying on and ripping off gringos. Especially those fresh, newly arrived, starry-eyed gringos who let their guard down as soon as they get hit in the face with the tropical air as they get off the airplane. And I ought to know, because 20-some years ago I was one of those starry-eyed idiots too. Only back then, there wasn't a sophisticated contingent of real estate and legal rip-off artists. And here's one good rule to follow. Beware of anyone that warms up to you a bit too fast and tries to be your friend. That's pretty much a sure sign that you've been marked and there's a con coming. And you know, the funny thing is I've met a lot of Latin con men in my day, always on the tourist trail, and at first, anyway, they're very likable guys and gals. But that's their gift, and that's how they skin you. So when on the tourist trail, have your antenna up for that. Now, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, it's much different because, well, there's just not enough gringos around to develop scams like that. When there's so few gringos, it just doesn't pay. So then, what about low-budget expatting and retiring in Latin America? What's it looking like these days? Well, after weighing out the pros and cons of the 20 Latin American countries, I have to say, if you're not Mr. and Mrs. Moneybags, Central America is the way to go. In Central America, if you remain off the tourist trail, that is, avoid Panama, Costa Rica, Belize, and of course, Mexico. And by the way, Mexico is not Central America. Look it up. It's considered part of North America. Actually, it should be considered part of the southwestern United States, don't you think? But that's another sad story we won't get into right now. You know what I'm talking about. So anyway, in the countries I recommend in Central America, that is Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and parts of Salvador, in those countries, everything you buy is about a third of what it is up in the States, except for fuel and electricity, and most stuff imported from the first world. Notice I said here, imported from the first world. And you know, when I mention that to people, they say, oh man, but everything cool's imported from the first world. Well, I beg to differ. Nearly every big first world conglomerate and international corporation has now set up manufacturing plants throughout Latin America. And that's why these days, and here's a good example, you could buy something first world like Kellogg's Corn Flakes at third world Latin prices, whereas just a few years back you'd pay first world prices or even a little more. Why? Because they had to be imported from the States. Now, I'm not advocating Kellogg's Corn Flakes, but when you go into the grocery store, you'll find various brands of Corn Flakes, Kellogg's Corn Flakes, and a couple of local brands of Corn Flakes that are just as good, or bad, depending how educated you are about processed foods. Anyway, you'll get a lot of brands and a lot of variety these days, all of them at very cheap third world prices. Even the Kellogg's brand. Now, 5 or 6 years ago, the Kellogg's brand would have been twice the price, more than first world prices due to import duties. But Kellogg's is all over Latin America now, so they produce virtually the same product with very cheap third world labor. I mean, when you can pay your workers minimum wage, which is about $250 to $300 a month, you can sell your products at third world prices. Isn't that why all the big factories left the USA? To get out from under unions and high labor costs? Now, I'm not making a value judgment here. It's just the way it is. Before I get on with some more wild and crazy stories from my experiences here in Venezuela, and by the way, next stop, Colombia, let me remind you again that you can go to expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link to sign up for my Expat Wisdom Off the Tourist Trail seminar. That'll be taking place in July, about almost 2 months from now. So head on over to expatwisdom.com for full details. You won't regret it. And again, the seminar will be in Central America, off the Gringo Tourist Trail, in and around a number of places I highly recommend if you plan on becoming an expat. And not surprisingly, a good percentage of my previous seminar attendees are actually living down here now. Surprise, surprise, they really must have liked it, huh? Which means, of course, if you come down to my next seminar, you're going to meet some of these people and can talk to them personally. So get off the fence and make some plans to come down here and see what the Gringo Advantage is all about. Okay, now again, since I'm in Venezuela, I have to warn you, the equipment is not up to snuff and sometimes I might sound like I'm lisping. Meaning occasionally there's some kind of unintended audio clipping going on which I can't control, so just bear with me. Anyway, last show I left off by telling you that the tour guide on the tour bus in Caracas that took us up to that cool Swiss-made tram ride that took you up to that spectacular mountain site. Well, when we got to the parking lot where the tram began, before we even got off the bus, the tour guide proceeded to rip each and every one of us foreigners off for a couple of bucks. All 25 of us being foreigners from other Latin countries, except for me, of course, the sole gringo. The tour guide ripped us off on the admission ticket to the tram. And since there were about 25 of us, that's $80 to $100, or 2 months' salary at the minimum wage. And there are only two people in that bus, the driver and the tour guide, to split that extra dough. So the way it shakes out for them, every time they take a group of foreigners up to that ride, they each get to skim an extra month's wages. Pretty good pickings, huh? And if you recall from the last show, I mentioned that I found out they were skimming from us because I went up to the ticket booth myself and asked the price of a ticket. It was 100 bolivars, about a buck and a half. Yet, they charged us $5 each in the tour bus while we were still in the parking lot. They kept us all rounded up in the bus around the parking lot so we wouldn't go up to the ticket counter ourselves, which was about a block away. Of course, we didn't know it was a ploy then, but we know it now. Then when our little group got out of the bus, they never let us pass the ticket taker. We were directed in the opposite direction to the tram ride itself. The object was never to let us see the posted price. But because I was born nosy, I ran up to the ticket counter and checked. I was the only one to do that. So after I found out that information, I went back to the little group and confronted that tour guide lady and I said, "You know, you ripped us all off. It's only 100 bolivars to take that ride." With that, she gave me a doe-eyed look of innocence and shrugged. And with a kind of a nervous surprise in her voice, she said, "Oh, really? I wasn't aware of that." As if it was breaking news to her. Total BS, of course, and I said it loud enough so that quite a few people on the tour heard me. They just looked at me and shrugged. They didn't like it, but like one guy from Brazil said, a ride like this in Brazil would cost $20, not $5, so to him it was a good deal. Anyway, you get what I mean. Everyone in Venezuela is trying to gouge you. Not because they're innately criminals, it's because they have to eat. Now, remember, with a minimum wage of about $50 a month and 90% of the population earning that, there's a lot of scamming and scrabbling going on, I can tell you that. For example, when we got to the top of the mountain, they have a couple of nice little restaurants and tourist shops and kiosks, and I walked up to one of the kiosks and saw that the sign said 30 bolivars for a beer. And I said to the guy, "How much for a beer in dollars? I don't have any bolivars." And he looked around to make sure that no one in uniform was standing there. And he said, $1. And then I said in my pretty good Spanish, "Tell you what, give me 2 beers and I'll give you $1. And he handed me 2 beers without asking a question. No arguments from that guy. He just wanted one of those rare U.S. dollars. So he tried to gouge me, but I beat him to the game. And you know what? At half of what he tried to nick me for, he still made money. Because, you see, the going rate for a beer was 30 bolivars, and I bought 2, so that's 60 bolivars, right? And the street black market conversion rate for a dollar is 70 bolivars, so he made an extra 10 bolivars on the deal. In other words, he made a reasonable 12 or 13% profit on the deal. You get it? Well, if you don't, just have to take my word for it. Now, I can give you 1,001 reasons why it's not a good idea to become an expat in Venezuela. However, you can make a ton of money if you're astute. But it's really like another world, so if you're not prepared and you don't know your Spanish, forget about it. Now, you know people talk about crime in Latin America and how terrible it is in Mexico. I talk about that too. And how in many big cities in Latin America, there are sections you'd never want to walk through day or night. Well, just like Chicago and Cleveland, I guess. And by the way, shortly I'll be doing a whole show on crime in Latin America, so stay tuned for that. And in that vein, here's a little food for thought. It should be no news to you that Mexico, as a country, has the worst crime statistics when it comes to tourists and expats and gringos and anyone else who's got a dime to scratch together, and that includes crime statistics for locals, too. That said, Venezuela, specifically Caracas, the capital, comes in second. So, all of you guys and gals out there who may have read that the biggest crime rates are in San Salvador, or Tegucigalpa or San Pedro Sula, Honduras, or even Guatemala City. Well, yes, those are big cities with a lot of crime, too much crime. Though, remember, only certain districts within those cities have high crime rates. There are a lot of safe neighborhoods and very first world sections, too. But you knew that already, right? Now, when you talk about the countryside of Honduras and El Salvador, then the crime rates are rather low. So what I'm saying is you can't mix the citywide crime rates with the countrywide crime rates. That's apples and oranges, except when it comes to Mexico and Venezuela. Now with this, my most recent trip to South America, for part of the trip, I took a cruise. And don't worry, I'm going to devote a show or two just to this cruise because I think it's one of the best deals you'll ever find in the world on a cruise. And in this case, it's a Spanish cruise line. And if you remember, a year or two ago, I gave you some details on that all-inclusive Decameron hotel chain that I really believe and can prove it's the best all-inclusive deal in the world. Now, I'm here to tell you that this cruise line is the best cruise deal in the world. However, it's a Spanish cruise line and everybody speaks Spanish, though they try to translate things into English. Now, like I said, I've got a lot to say about this cruise line, and I'll be talking about this later. That said, here's a little teaser. You know, all cruise lines have entertainment and shows, nightclubs and ballrooms and casinos. You know the score. Well, on our first cruise day, at the big show at 7:30 at night, the cruise director made an announcement mentioning all the different countries that were represented by passengers on the ship. Now, there were 3,000 people on that ship. And you know how many gringos from North America? A total of, get this, 2. That's T-W-O, 2. And because of that, I experienced the most powerful gringo advantage I'd seen in years. So, that said, do make it a special effort to stay tuned when I start talking about my cruise experience, because after you hear what I've got to say about it, you're going to want to jump on board this one, if it's the last vacation you ever take. And let me tell you, not to worry if you don't speak any Spanish, because being that nearly everyone taking the cruise was an upscale Latin, obviously because they're the only ones that can afford a trip like that, even though to us gringos it seems dirt cheap. But I digress. Anyway, that meant many of them were educated professionals who spoke some English, though most of them were pretty rusty because they never got to practice it. So, guess who they'd practice on? Why, yours truly, of course, and certainly the other gringo on board who I never did get to meet. So what I'm saying is I highly recommend this cruise and don't be afraid to take it, even though your Spanish sucks and you're worried you won't run into any gringos to hang with. Which to me is always a great plus, because then I know I'm well off the gringo tourist trail. So even though no one around you is speaking intelligible English, you won't be lost. And all the signs and bulletins and menus, etc. are in English, Spanish, and Portuguese, because the cruise line goes from the Panama Canal, that's where you get on, and you go all the way down to Brazil. So, in effect, a third of the people on board were Brazilians, a third of them were Venezuelans, a quarter of them Colombians, and the rest a smattering of Latins from other parts. And get this, unlike those big American cruise lines like Carnival or Royal Caribbean, this Spanish cruise line is a 100% all-inclusive, all-you-can-eat and drink all the time. Anyway, stay tuned for that report because it'll both delight and amaze you. And for all you guys and gals coming down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar in July, you'll really get the inside track, and you'll get to see my personal photos. And then, I'll tell you exactly how, when, and where to hook up with that line and get the very best deal at Latin prices, not gringo prices. And the cost, like I said, you'll be amazed. Now, I don't make a dime or a commission or anything off telling you these things, because this show, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, is all about how gringos can come down here, live a first world life in Latin America at third world prices. Of course, you knew that already. And you know, as I stumble into these things, you're going to find out all about them. Enough said about that. Let's get back to Venezuela. And by the way, here's another thing that's very interesting about that cruise. You don't have to get on at Panama. You can get on at any one of the stops all the way down to Brazil. And you just don't have to get off for a day or two. When you book your passage, you can arrange your itinerary so you can stay on in a country as long as you want, because that boat makes a circle and comes around every week or two. Now, I will get to explaining all that later, so hang on for that. Anyway, let me just mention that when the cruise ship finally pulled up to Caracas, or the port that's about 20 miles from Caracas, Venezuela, of course, the gossip going around the ship that day and the night before was that it really wasn't a good idea to take a shore excursion. Just too dangerous, they said. In fact, when I booked the cruise at the travel agency, that's exactly what they told me there, too. They said, the ship will stop in Venezuela, but we don't recommend you get off. It's too dangerous. And for me, well, since I'd been shot at in Venezuela last time I was there, I figured, hell, what else is new? And like when a parent tells a kid not to do something, well, he wants to do it all the more. So I went on that shore excursion, and I'm still here. Anyway, as soon as the ship pulled into port at about 7:30 in the morning, as many passengers started rushing outside to the railings to check out what the port and the landscape looked like, well, it didn't take more than 5 or 10 minutes and we started hearing gunshots. Now, they didn't sound nearby. They were probably a couple of miles away, but Let me tell you, that does do something to your comfort level when you first get into town, you know? And it's not like I haven't heard gunshots before in big cities in Latin America, even in Chicago. But that was the very first time I heard random gunshots at 7:30 in the morning, you know? That is, apart from Brazil. It seems like every time I took a cab ride there, I'd hear distant gunshots day or night. So, anyway, unlike most of our port destinations where the boat practically empties out and everybody goes ashore for their excursions, and the port's nice and clean and calm and pretty much first world, like, for example, the one in Cartagena, Colombia, or, for example, in Roatan, Honduras. Anyway, as for passengers disembarking in Caracas, Venezuela, of the maybe 400 adventurous passengers that actually booked excursions to Caracas, well, as you might expect, after hearing that early volley of gunshots, the shore leave crowd dwindled down to about half, 200 maybe, 90% of which had already booked nice, safe bus tours through the cruise line at about 60 to 80 bucks a pop. Now, I knew they were getting raked over the coals at that price, so what I did was I walked onto the dock to the tourist information center, and I told the guy that I wanted a tour and I wanted to pay 20 bucks, because I already found out way in advance that that's what the real price is if you don't book through the cruise line. So for 20 bucks, you get the very same tour with the very same people and the very same tour agency with the very same fleet of buses. The trick is you just don't book it in the cruise ship. You do it when you hit port at the tourist information desk. And that tourist information desk is your best bet every time. And if you're worried about safety, it's contained in a 100% safe area within the port dock itself, usually no more than a block away from when your feet first touch down on land. And no unauthorized persons from the city streets on the other side of the dock can ever get back into that restricted area and make contact with you or anyone else from the cruise ship without passing through a guard checkpoint. And you'll have to go through that guard checkpoint to get out to the street too, and then you're on your own. Or, if you're like me and you hooked up with a tour, you'll be driving past the guard checkpoint in a nice, safe bus. Now, I understand there were about 20 people from the cruise line who did neither. They decided to wing it, meaning no tour, no bus. That is, hire their own private taxi or limousine as they hit the street and take off and just check the city out. Which, by the way, in Caracas is a very, very cheap way to do it. That'll cost you about $5 for the whole day. Why? Because, like I said in the last show, an entire tank of gas down here is about 10 cents U.S. 10 cents, and I know you think I'm nuts and you think I've got to be wrong about that, but believe me, it's true. So basically, your bus driver or taxi driver or whoever has no overhead except the vehicle. Now, about those 20 people, mostly couples who took private taxis, well, guess what? Within a half an hour after disembarking the ship, two of them were robbed on the street at gunpoint. Oh, what great travel memories, huh? Now, I'm not bragging, but I don't think that would have happened to me. Reason? You know the reason. I do not dress or act like the rest of the people on that cruise ship. Remember, I told you that to take a cruise down here in Latin America, you got to be a pretty upscale Latin. Even though when you hear about the prices, you won't believe it. Any gringo up in the States would think, by the price, it was a tramp steamer or a tugboat. But believe me, it's not. Anyway, like I said, upscale Latins take cruises. We're talking about the upper 1 or 2% of the Latin population that can actually afford one. And like I've said so many times before, Latin folks are all about the show. So you better believe that on this cruise ship, there were a lot of strutters. I'm talking about men with their real Nike and Reebok tennis shoes, which are very expensive down here. Average Latin guys certainly can't afford that stuff. I'm talking about young and old macho guys, loaded up with their own bling, you know. Rolexes and rings and gold jewelry, real or otherwise, I sure can't tell anymore by looking. Anyway, you get the picture. And the Latin women, they're all decked out in Guess, Jordache, and real Gloria Vanderbilt jeans, the obviously expensive stuff, along with the bling, too. And naturally, when they disembark, the rest of the sweaty masses can spot them a mile away. And I always think, what's wrong with these people? They have to know better than that. But one of the things I did find out, that many of the people on these ships have bodyguards, at home, that is. And they don't bring bodyguards on cruise ships. That would be way too gauche. And of course, they don't drag their maids and cleaning ladies along with them either. So what you've got is a lot of upscale Latins putting on a show with none of their usual entourage along to scare off would-be bad guys or to run interference for them when they're out in the town. So they disembark the boat in casual but high style with the usual classist attitude and dangling jewelry to match. In the same way they're accustomed to going out at home. Tigers don't change their stripes, you know? And of course they can get away with that all day long on their own turf, but now they're cruising in another country, a country they've probably never been in before. Now, that's a universal game that Latins love to play, and in the nice sections of most Latin countries and towns, they can get away with it. But you do that in Caracas, you're really asking for trouble. For one thing, there just aren't very many nice sections of town at all. Oh sure, they've got some islands of prosperity where their first world hotels are all located, but believe me, it's not like the rest of Latin America. Not in a country where the minimum wage is 50 or 60 bucks a month. Sure, in a country like that, you have to expect that the average tourist is going to get nicked once in a while. So then you might ask, just how bad is crime in Venezuela for the average folks living there? Well, here's another little incident I witnessed firsthand. I mentioned that tram built by the Swiss, the one that takes you up the mountainside. A great trip. Anyway, it holds 6 people. And on the way up, in my particular car, there were 2 people from Brazil and 2 homegrown natives from Venezuela. And naturally, on the way up, the view's spectacular, so people are snapping pictures. And there was a guy there with an iPad, a local, a Venezuelan guy. And I noticed right away that the screen was completely fractured, yet the thing worked. It had maybe 50 shatter lines in it, but it was still intact. So I said to the guy, "Had some bad luck, huh? Out of parts at the Apple store, too?" And he just laughed and said, "You're a gringo, huh?" And believe me, in Venezuela, I wish I had a bolivar for every time someone pointed me out like that. In fact, people walk right up to you, smile, and say, "Gringo, huh?" Anyway, you're not going to believe this. The guy said to me, "These days, when you buy an iPad, the best thing you could do is wrap the screen with a piece of metal and fracture it a bit. Then it won't get stolen." And I said, "What?" Then he said it was his 3rd iPad. The first 2 got stolen, and he's had this one for well over a year. It's fractured, and he's keeping it that way. He said in the last year he'd been shaken down twice while walking through the park, and the bad guys didn't bother to take his iPad because there's no market for stolen iPads with broken screens. More about that on the next show.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.